Hey, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Everybody, Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. Is the Roach Fest on now? Have you got C-SPAN? Aren't all the announced candidates for the Republican crazy people? Aren't they having a debate tonight or something? We'll have to try to find that on C-SPAN. I'm not sure where it is, but oh God. Too bad somebody can't fly over wherever this debate is and drop a load of roach spray. Wouldn't that be cool? I sometimes wonder why we're not in the throes of a complete nervous breakdown. We've had a lot of bad news in this country here lately. Coming off of 8 years of George W. Bush and the Bush crime family. I don't know how we survived that. I honestly don't know how we survived it. And the first couple of years of the Obama presidency, as people are coming out of the ether, Democrats and liberals and progressives coming out of the ether about what Mr. Obama's agenda really is. But the last few days, the credit downgrade, the stock market just ripping and crashing and tumbling, the 30 U.S. soldiers dead in Afghanistan, I'm sorry, when the RPG hit the transport helicopter, and then five dead announced today, five more. And if you read the reports, it says violence is at its worst in Afghanistan since we toppled the Taliban government in late 2001. Record civilian casualties, high levels of foreign troop deaths during the first half of 2011. And you've got to wonder why we're there. The spike in casualties, 390 foreign troops. That's the invaders, which includes us. 390 troops have been killed so far this year. 711 last year. It's just I don't know. I don't know how to articulate it. UN figures show 1,462 Afghan civilians were killed in the first 6 months of this year. I mean, the death and destruction goes on and on and on and on in that country. Why, other than the usual, we're there to steal everything we can get our hands on, everything that's not nailed down, but that doesn't work in Afghanistan. I mean, it never has. But the situation there is becoming intolerable, isn't it? I mean, how much longer can corporate America and the corporate executive branch of this government, our government, and the corporate-controlled legislative branch of this government, how much longer can the lie be sustained that we're there for some kind of a reason that involves, oh, I don't know, honor, justice, truth, whatever. I don't know. It's really, it's not a good situation. I have found my presidential candidate. She is not running, that I'm aware of. But this is a person that I would do anything I could, which is not a whole lot, to help get elected president of the United States. Let me read something she posted today. Growing up, every decision for my family involved a careful calculation about how we could pay for it. A visit to the doctor, a tank of gas to drive to my grandparents' house, a new pair of school shoes. My Aunt Bert cut everyone's hair. My Aunt B bought my Easter dress every year. And my brother David paid for his school clothes with money from his paper route. There were plenty of ups and downs. So my father had a heart attack. The store where he worked changed his job and cut his pay. We lost our car, and my mother went to work answering phones at Sears so we could make the mortgage payments. My parents worked hard all their lives. My three older brothers carved out their own futures. One was career Air Force, one was heavy construction, and one started his own business. I went to college on a scholarship. I got married and started teaching in an elementary school, but I never shook off the worry. Did we have enough money to cover basic expenses? Enough money to help our parents retire? Enough money to build secure futures for our children? After I graduated law school, I started focusing on what was happening to other hardworking families like ours. The story isn't good. For a generation now, incomes have been flat, while basic expenses like housing, health care, and child care have risen sharply. Families have turned more and more to debt to finance education, to pay medical bills, to cover a cutback in hours or a job loss, or just to make it to the end of the month. With each passing year, families have found themselves with less economic cushions to absorb a major health care crisis, a job loss, or a divorce. What it means to be middle class in this country, having a good job, owning a home, putting together the money to pay for college, seems to be slipping out of reach. Today, it's harder than ever for middle class families in Massachusetts and across the country to get by. Each day, more families find themselves deeply worried about money. They wake up to news about wild swings in the stock market and a government that seems unable to exercise even the most basic common sense. They see shuttered windows on Main Street and hear about the latest neighbor to lose a job or a home. They wonder what would be the next shoe to drop in their communities or in their own families. A few years ago, I decided to tackle one part of the problem. Big banks that drained billions of dollars out of families' pockets by hiding costs in fine print and selling predatory loans. I started to work on an idea for a new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, because I believed it would help make a real difference in the lives of middle-class families. The concept is simple. In a world where debt has become so common and necessary, families need to be able to understand and to compare loan products like mortgages and credit cards so they can make good financial decisions. The costs and risk of financial deals should be clear and transparent. No tricks, no traps. After Congress enacted the new CFPB last year, President Obama asked me to help set it up. Starting from our first weeks, we were determined to make things better for American families. We worked to make federal mortgage paperwork shorter and easier to understand. We set up an Office of Service Member Affairs to help military families navigate the financial repercussions of deployment and frequent moves. And we developed systems to make sure that even trillion-dollar banks comply with the law. We put in place the building blocks for an agency that will make credit markets safer and fairer for families. Last week, my role setting up the consumer agency ended. My husband and I packed up the car and made it back to our home of 17 years in Massachusetts. I left Washington, but I don't plan to stop fighting for middle-class families. I spent years working against special interests and have the battle scars to show for it, and I have no intention of stopping now. It's time for me to think hard about what role I can play next to help rebuild a middle class that has been hacked at, chipped at, and pulled at for more than a generation and that is under greater strain every day. In the weeks ahead, I want to hear from you about the challenges we face and how we get our economy growing again. I also want to hear your ideas about how we can fix what all of us, regardless of party, know is a badly broken political system. In Washington, I saw up close and personal how much influence special interests have over our lawmaking, and I saw just how hard it is for families to be heard. I want to hear your thoughts about how we can make sure that our voice, our families, our friends, our neighbors are heard again. We have a lot of work to do in our Commonwealth and our country. We need to rebuild our economy family by family and block by block. We need to create new jobs and fix our broken housing market. We need to make sure that there is real accountability over Wall Street and that the greed and recklessness that created the last financial crisis do not create the next one. We need to restore the hope of a secure retirement and the promise of a good education. We need to stop measuring our economy by profits and executive compensation at our largest companies and start measuring it by how many families can stand securely in the middle class. I'm glad to be back home, and I'm looking forward to discussing with you what we can accomplish together. Signed, Elizabeth Warren. Twice as cloudy as I'd been the night before, and I went in seeking clarity. I went to the doctor, I went to the mountains, I looked to the children, I drank from the fountain. We go to the doctor, we go to the mountains, we look to the children, we drink from the fountain. Yeah, we go to the Bible, we go through the workout. The hour, yeah, Elizabeth Warren, the woman who has struggled mightily against the negative influence of the worst parts of capitalism, and she struggled so well that the Republicans made it very clear that they would not accept her nomination to be anything. And of course, Barack Obama, being the coward and unleader that he is, must have had a conversation with Elizabeth and said, okay, you set it up, thank you very much, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya, you know, or something like that. And so she took her husband and went back to Massachusetts. Now there's talk that she may run for the Senate in Massachusetts against, what's his name, the Republican won the last time, I don't know. But all I can say is if Elizabeth Warren runs for national office, to the extent that this little 25-cent radio program can help, I would certainly do it. I would even clean up my act a little bit. Remember back in the 60s, Get Clean for Gene? Remember that? I would even try to straighten up a little bit and fly more balanced than I do if I knew it would have an effect on Elizabeth Warren running for president. This is, to me, the kind of leadership that's desperately needed, and it's the kind that should come as a challenge to Barack Obama from the left, from the liberal left, from a position of consumer protection. First and foremost, the enemy in this country is not 50 or 60 Al-Qaeda freaks running around in Afghanistan being supported by, we support them. We send billions, or have sent billions, to Pakistan. That money is then turned over to Al-Qaeda. The Saudis, the George Bush business partner family, they send God knows how much money to support the fundamental crazy people in the Islamic religion. And so what we're doing is supporting the deaths of our own soldiers. We're supporting this it's just crazy. It's just insane. And out of Iowa tonight, there is a whole clutch of cockroaches who are standing there trying to tell each other and this brain dead audience listening to them that Barack Obama is a socialist, that Barack Obama is un-American or anti, oh my God, you know, a socialist, Barack Obama, who defines a protective wall around predatory capitalism. That is how you define him. And these crazy bastards, these religious freaks who have gathered together, all of them, out in Ames, Iowa. Like I said, I just wish somebody could bomb the place with a roach disinfected, a roach killer. Where's Tom DeLay when he could really do something, you know? And all this talk about Rick Perry? Rick Perry? a little bit more on him a little bit later tonight. I mean, after what he did in Texas and the people that clustered out there, the speakers, I mean, you had a representative of every hate group in America on that podium with their half-witted, whatever that was, prayer warrior thingy or whatever. You know, what are they called? Apostolic Pentecostal crazy people who really believe, you know, that God comes into their bedroom at night and tells them what to do. And, you know, Rick Perry now is making the declaration, same declaration that Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann made, that God is choosing him. You know, all these people have different gods. They have this whole pantheon of coke-sniffing, crack-burning, freakish gods that they believe talk to them and tell them what to do. Well, Rick, you're the anointed one tonight. By God, I want you to get out there and announce you're going to run for president. And then these people come out and say that they got a message from God. What the hell? Elizabeth Warren would get my vote in a heartbeat. JP writes, Mike, love your show. I'm responding to your question. When will we do something? Like take to the streets. Mike, I get the question, and you're right to ask, and I wonder when will I do something other than just send my money to liberal causes? Because you're right. Something needs to be done. But politicians listen to one thing, and I don't have enough of it. Quite frankly, they don't give a blank about us anymore. Obama's a perfect example of that. Citizens United effed over every citizen completely, and every person with a brain knows that. Basically, I'm saying I feel my vote really hasn't changed anything, but made it worse. Think Obama. And taking to the streets, really? Politicians have stopped listening, and everyone knows it. So really, why bother? Trying to keep it lit. JP in St. Paul.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guy's lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor and the rich get rich. That's how it goes. And everybody knows.
Before the hour, thanks to Farm Aid for underwriting the program these past 2 weeks, and to Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance and BioWilly. Farm Aid will be this Saturday, August 13th, in Kansas City, Kansas. You can hear it live on Sirius XM Radio. You can also watch it at their website. FarmAid.org. And of course, at this point, you know what Farm Aid is all about. And I saw this today, or I heard it today on ABC News, and went to their website and got the story later or earlier this evening. And as I looked at the story and read it, and then thought about what Willie and Annie Nelson and the whole Farm Aid organization is doing, what biodiesel is doing, the story just kind of screamed. 2 years ago, ABC News cameras did an investigative piece on young children working on industrial farms, Michigan's blueberry fields. And now federal investigators have found another example of illegal use of child labor in the berry industry. Three Southwest Washington State strawberry growers were fined $73,000 last week, at the U.S. Department of Labor found children between the ages of 6 and 11 working in these strawberry fields. Now, there are exemptions in the federal child labor laws that allow 12 and 13-year-olds to work for unlimited hours on large agricultural operations. Yeah, you didn't know that? But children under the age of 12 are strictly prohibited from working like this. Now, we're not talking about family farms here. We're talking about industrial operations that are hiring 6 and 7 and 8-year-olds to go out and pick the berries. Columbia Fruit LLC is one of the factory farms. Another one is George Hoffman Farms. Another one is Berry Good Farms. In addition to the charges of child labor, they're also in violation of minimum wage laws. To force these factory farms into compliance, the Department of Labor invoked an infrequently used enforcement tool called the hot goods provision, which prevents these bastards from shipping produce harvested in violation of child labor laws. You think this stuff is not happening, don't you? You hear, if you listen to this program regularly, you hear me really go, you know, frothing at the mouth about predatory capitalism. And I get emails from people that, you know, say, why don't I go live in Cuba where I'd be happier? You know, Jesus Christ, that's a good solution, right, you dumbass? But this is just another example. These violations in Washington were found 2 years after this ABC News investigation discovered children, some as young as 5 years old, illegally working in these Michigan corporate farms, a couple of which were major suppliers to Walmart and other chain grocery stores. Walmart, when informed, suspended ties with the supplier pending an investigation and later reinstated this factory farm after the factory farm assured Walmart that underage children no longer be working in its fields. Boy, isn't that nice? Gosh, guys, gals who run these sweat holes where you put seven-year-olds to work, I have a seven-year-old. And trying to imagine little kids in order to survive, you know, those dirty goddamn illegal immigrants, right? That pay taxes and pay into Social Security and never get anything and eventually get busted. You know why they use the kids? You know why they use the kids? They use the kids because they have little hands. Yeah, how about that? Little hands. And the little hands make it easier to get in you know, into those berry bushes and pick the fruit. It's little hands. They're little hands. Ah, isn't that nice? Aw. Now, what the Nelsons and Farm Aid and Biodiesel and Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance, what they're all talking about. You've heard three people on this program over the past week and a half. Willie Nelson, Annie Nelson, Jennifer Fahey, all connected to these organizations that are trying to focus on the importance of family farms, family ranches. I don't know. Little hands. Jesus Christ. A lawyer who works, who provides legal services to low-income families working in berry picking, said, quote, minimum wage laws are not being followed with the adults who are working in the industry. Across the board, we see people making $5 or less an hour. People can't make minimum wage by the piece, and so if they have another set of little hands adding to the pile of berries, they might be able to make enough to live on. This is the United Goddamn States of America! Can you believe this? Of course you can! Of course you can! It happens right here! Child labor laws, huh? Screw that! Schmidt added that working these slow-growing strawberry plants can be arduous work for children. We take Molly every is it spring, Kathy? Early summer when we go pick the strawberries? We take Molly and we go out and we'll spend maybe 2 hours picking strawberries at a family farm out here in not far from Atlanta, Lawrenceville, Georgia. Snellville, Georgia, out towards Athens, Georgia. It's a farm, and you know you pay them. I think it's $8, and you take a bucket and you walk down the rows and you pick berries, and you can eat as many as you want. You pick them, you take them home. We take them home. Kathy makes strawberry preserves, strawberry pie, all kinds of stuff, and Molly helps. You know, Molly helps cook, and it's very good because it allows her to see the berries on the bush. And 3 days later, she's eating it in jam on her toast. And Molly loves doing it for about an hour. And when we go out to do this, usually it's on a hot day and the sun's beating down. And I can't help but think about people who have to do this for a living. Now, adults, okay. Okay. But kids, my daughter's age... doing this for 10 hours a day? Ms. Schmidt said, the kind of work that kids are doing on commercial farms is fundamentally different from the kind of berry picking people did as kids 50 years ago. We're talking about kids now who are picking 100 to 200 pounds of berries a day. In strawberries, that's a lot of stooping and standing. They complain to us about backaches. Their little backs hurt when they sleep at night. And then we see those horribly bruised knees. Children! Who cares? They should have pulled themselves up by their bootstraps, you know, like maybe before they were born. No, that's right. The parents shouldn't be here illegally. God damn it, Mike, why are you defending lawbreakers? So when you hear Willie Nelson or Annie Nelson or if you're going to watch or listen to Farm Aid on Saturday, you know, when people make an effort, and you don't see this very much anymore, when people make an effort to educate me and educate you about what's going on out there, for Christ's sake, listen, pay attention. I know you do. I'm not, I don't know why I'm screaming. I know that you do pay attention. I know you do everything you can, but to make the assumption that this country needs more of the sort of leadership that will look the other way and say, well, we don't care if the kids are, you know, six-year-olds are working 10 hours a day in a strawberry field or a blueberry. We're just going to turn away. And we don't care that their parents and their aunts and uncles are being paid, you know, $4.50 an hour. And then the factory farm turns around and takes some of that back for the shack that these people sleep in at night. I mean, what side are you on? What side are you on? Huh? You ever think about that? What side are you on? Because that's important right now. Which side are you on, brother? Sister?
Life is a hard life, it's a very hard life. It's a hard life.
Trump's picking strawberries, huh? That's great. God, this is a great country or what? Representative Cory Gardner, of a Republican, of course, from Colorado. Gardner was at a town hall meeting or something here during this break. And this is reported at Huffington Post. One of his constituents expressed concern that she might lose her job to outsourcing that's being helped along by these corporate tax break incentives, where corporations are encouraged to take their businesses out of the country. Because when they do that, they can hide income. Corporate income is exempt from taxation, you know, foreign income. So the American worker gets, not only does the American worker lose her job when it's taken over to China or someplace, but then she also finds out that the tax base in the country is going down the toilet, which means that whatever social services that might have been available to her or her family, like, for example, a Pell Grant for her kid to go to school, anything, is going to disappear too. So this woman was at this town hall meeting, Republican, Representative Cory Gardner, Republican, Colorado, and she was talking about her concern that she might lose her job to outsourcing. And what was Representative Cory Gardner's solution? Find another job. Huh? Here's the back and forth. The woman, but what about my job? I want to keep it. Not new jobs. I want to keep my job. Cory Gardner, well, make sure that your business is successful. We need to make sure that we're, and the constituent interrupted, they're successful. They're training those Vietnamese, and I want to learn. They make me work 45 hours a week, and they don't pay for training anymore. They used to pay for 2 weeks of training every year. They quit paying for training 3 years ago. But they are training. They're giving these other people the technology. They're giving them what I want to know, and I don't have time to learn. And another constituent pipes up, and they get tax incentives to do it. Representative Cory Gardner. Well, to go back to the question, if that company can succeed, I would hope that they would share their success with you. If they're not, maybe that's not a great company to work for. Jesus God. And today, Romney said corporations are people. So what sort of people are corporations? Well, they're the people whose profits hit an all-time high at the end of 2010. You know, corporations are people. And evidently, they're also people who hate their country. This is what we're going to get with a continuation of the policies put in place by the Bush crime family. Well, actually, the policies put in place by President Ronald Reagan 30 years ago. It has all come to fruition now. This is what the right wing, this is what the predatory capitalists have been waiting for. And now they have an entire political class that they own outright, with a few exceptions. They own it. So these clowns, these half-asses that are standing behind these phony-ass podiums in Ames, Iowa tonight, these Republicans, we're standing there talking about the socialist Barack Obama and what they're going to do, oh yeah, when they get into office. And yet, none of these clowns, oh, it's on the Fox News channel, none of the clowns from Fox News would dare ask him, well, what's your position on five-year-olds picking berries at commercial farms in the state of Washington? What's your position? You know, just write down the list. I'm afraid I'm going to lose my job. Well, you need to find another job then. And the Senator Jim DeMint, this loony son of a bitch from South Carolina, he was on one of these insane Christian conservative radio shows yesterday, and he concluded that the Of all the anti-American administrations in his lifetime, Obama's is the most anti-American. Jesus Christ. DeMint said to this Christian freak, quote, "We saw within a few days that this president was going to be heavy-handed. He was going to implement his agenda and pay back his political allies. And it just went on from there to Obamacare and then to Dodd-Frank." And then he said this, "It's been the most anti-business and I consider anti-American administration of my lifetime." When were you born, you dumbass? 2 minutes ago? He goes on, things that are just so anathema to the principles of freedom and everything he has come up with centralizes more power in Washington, creates more socialist-style collectivist policies. This president is doing something that's so far in the realm of anything Republicans ever did, it's hard to even imagine. Well, you don't want to drop facts on a floating turd like Jim DeMint, but here's a couple. Obama's health care law is modeled on the Massachusetts health care system created by Republican Governor Mitt Romney. Its success, the one in Massachusetts, inspired Jim DeMint to support Romney in the last Republican presidential primary. The Dodd-Frank Act was a fairly bipartisan, if insufficient, effort to regulate Wall Street in the wake of the 2008 a scam that these sons of bitches pulled on the American public and were still paying for. And pretty much every significant thing Obama's done since then, extending the Bush tax cuts, funding the federal government, raising the debt limit, all of it has been done on Republican terms in order to end three different hostage crises with these bastards. And Jim DeMint, well, he's crazy. I don't know why I get surprised when these real crazy bastards say this kind of stuff. But Obama, a socialist? You know, since these right-wing freaks are going to accuse him of being a socialist anyway, they've done it since he was elected, why not go ahead and promote socialist ideas, Mr. President? You're going to be accused of it anyway. And democratic socialism is about the only way to get the economy working again and save this country from slipping into the hands of psychopaths like, switch on Fox News. You'll see them all standing there. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Hey, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say Bush crime family. Program. We didn't have any individual sponsors tonight, huh? Okay, that's cool. That's right. The entire program is and has been for the past week and a half underwritten by Farm Aid 2011, Willie Nelson and Annie Nelson and the Farm Aid crew, along with Bio Willie, which is a biodiesel company started by Willie Nelson. That lessens the impact of greenhouse gases on the environment, and the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. We have a video up at our website, MikeMalloy.com, about halfway down the main page. It runs about 5 minutes, 20 seconds, and it's about biodiesel in Oregon. And if you want to know more about it, just click on the video. Just go there and click on it. Biodiesel, as I'm sure you know from the conversation we had with Annie Nelson the other night, it obviously, by definition, reduces dependence on oil, foreign or domestic. It just reduces dependence on it. You know, I like it when a politician says, "We're going to reduce our dependence on foreign oil." What the hell does that mean? I mean, think about it. Foreign oil, oil that is drilled in the United States becomes foreign oil. It goes someplace else. I mean, oil doesn't have little markers on it that says, "I'm American oil. I'm Saudi oil. I'm Iranian oil. I'm Venezuelan oil." What is this? What is this crap? About, you hear the politicians talk about, well, our dependence on foreign oil. What do you want to depend on? Local oil? Jesus God. I don't know. I don't know. Biodiesel, of course, is locally produced. It promotes community development and should be available soon in your area. I hope. I don't know. We'll find out. But it's made in America and it stayed in America. You like that? Made in America and it's literally made. You don't punch holes in the earth to get biodiesel fuel. Anyway, Farm Aid Live, August 13th, day after tomorrow. This Saturday, Kansas City, Kansas. Go to their website, farmaid.org. I think you'll find a petition or a form there you can send to your senator demanding. You might as well demand that Senate support goes to family farmers and family ranchers for a change, and not just these corporate bastards that like to put five-year-olds to work picking strawberries 10 hours a day and then pay their mamas and daddies $4.50 an hour. Huh? You think that's a good idea? You think? Or do nothing. It's your choice. It's my choice, too. Farm Aid 2011. And the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. Thanks to both of those organizations for underwriting this program for 2 weeks. Sincerely, thank you. Dave in L.A. Sent this to me a couple of days ago. He said, "Mike, I was very pleased to read that the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party." I hung out with those people one time up in Sacramento. It was really something to see, to be in I forget the venue in Sacramento where we were, and I was there. Why was I there? I guess I was there to do some kind of a gig for the station. We were on a Sacramento station one time, right? Huh? We still are? I don't think so. Not Sacramento. I don't know. I don't know anymore. But I was there for a gig at a theater, in a rehabbed, restored theater in downtown Sacramento. Beautiful place. And some people said, "Hey, listen, the Democratic Caucus is in town, or the California Democratic Party is in town for the convention, and the Democratic Caucus meets tomorrow, you got to come." So I went and hung out with these people, and I'll tell you something, hang out with real progressives who are politically motivated to the point where they form a faction within the California Democratic Party was pretty exciting. It's very easy to sit in this studio in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains and get all negative. But you hang out with some activists. Talk with Annie Nelson. Hang out with the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party. You know, do something like that. And all of a sudden, it's hard to just be so negative. But I digress. Dave in L.A. writes to me about the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party is bringing up the issue of challenging Obama in the Democratic primary. They passed a resolution which outlines Obama's ineptness and lack of leadership. Oh, really? You mean the progressive? Yeah, that's what they mean. Here's some examples. His unilateral closed-door budget offer to slash Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, which endangers the entire New Deal and war on poverty safety nets. But Jim DeMint will tell you that this president is anti-American, anti-business, anti, you know, Jesus God. Next, his determination to escalate U.S. militarism through illegal secret drone attacks and unauthorized wars. His willingness to extend the Bush tax cuts for millionaires and bail out big banks without ending the foreclosure crisis that displaces American working families and American families that are no longer working. His insistence on pushing a health insurance bill which enriches private insurance companies while ignoring growing support for single-payer health care or robust public options. Remember all that? You do. Obama's continuance of President Bush's assault on civil liberties with an extension of the repressive Stalinist USA Patriot Act. Now, a lot of people on radio who identify themselves as liberals or progressives who will tell you that Obama, in spite of all this, is a liberal, a progressive. There's more. His failure to restore due process, including the protection of whistleblowers and habeas corpus. Yeah, we don't need that. His numerous failures to adhere to international law. Yeah, we don't need that. The continuing practice of nationwide FBI raids of anti-war progressive protesters. His decision to increase the arrests and deportations of undocumented workers. You know, I listened to these cockroaches on the Republican debate tonight talking about undocumented workers and all this other stuff. Barack Obama, his administration, has deported, what did I read today? 1 million undocumented workers, more than any president ever has. Barack Obama. His facilitation of the privatizing of the public sphere, which includes education and housing, among others. Privatizing it.
Oh, he's a socialist.
His disregard of his promises to the labor movement. His failure to adequately protect the environment and adequately address climate change. I mean, the list goes on and on. The latest thing, of course, is Obama deciding that it's going to be okay to issue permits to punch holes in the bottom of the Arctic Ocean. Not exactly the Arctic Ocean. The Chukchuk Sea, whatever the hell it's called. Punch holes. Shell Oil is going to go up and punch holes and look for oil. And what happens when they have an accident? Oh, they're not going to have an accident up there, Mike. Dave has more to say about this. I'll share it with you as soon as we come back. Stay with us. Finishing up this email from Dave in L.A., who wrote about the Progressive Caucus of the California Democratic Party, at least bringing up the issue of mounting a challenge against Obama from the true liberal wing of the Democratic Party in the primary. And Richard or Dave included that list I read you. Dave writes, looking at the list above, it's clear that we cannot trust Obama in the White House for another 4 years. I will add another item to the list, his failure to put on a comfortable pair of shoes, walking shoes, and visit Wisconsin. And as you know, in the last few weeks, Obama almost gave away the farm, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, in the blink of an eye. It's not his to give. We have no time to waste and must move full speed ahead in trying to get someone to challenge Obama. Peter B. Collins also discussed this on his recent radio program that you can listen. By the way, you can listen to him at peterbcollins.com online. Additionally, Robert Scheer recently conducted an interview with Dennis Kucinich on the Truth Dig radio program, in which Kucinich gives a scathing assessment of Obama. Yeah, well, I had occasion when we were in Seattle in July to spend some time with Kucinich once I was able to get Molly away from him, and just sit, you know, just sit down and talk about this stuff, you know, with no, not, you know, not in a public forum. Back in the so-called green room at this venue where we were at. And Kucinich is well aware that the Republicans in Ohio are gerrymandering his district into non-existence. He's trying to decide what to do. This is what the Republicans do. They see the Democratic Party as, I don't know, something, a mistake of nature, I guess. Democrats are, but the Democrats, a lot of Democrats are, but the Democratic Party isn't. Really isn't. Okay, maybe. But Kucinich, in private conversations, you know, the idea was tossed around about a different party, because I sat in that forum and declared that the Democratic Party is dead, which went over like a pork chop at a bar mitzvah, trust me, with that crew. But but Kucinich, I don't think Kucinich doubts that there is some truth to that. And to hear his take on the Obama presidency is really to hear a real Democrat talking. A real Democrat. Now, maybe it's because he's from Cleveland and I'm from Toledo. I don't know. Maybe it's that Northwestern Ohio thing. But it's very easy to understand this man. And when he gets pumped, there is not a better orator. You think Obama is good. I think Obama is good when he gets into the oratorical excesses that he has become known for. Obama. When you listen to Kucinich, when he gets going, Lord have mercy. You want to jump to your feet and applaud. So it's good to me to know. I just hope that Gene McCarthy emerges someplace, right? Remember that? The challenge back in 68? Okay. I know 90% of the people listening to this program have no 68. When was that? that's the year you were born, right, Kathy? but that's what happened. Actually, it wasn't 68. It was 66 or 67. I guess the latter part of 67. I don't know. But Gene McCarthy mounted a challenge against LBJ because Lyndon Johnson was not doing anything to end the war in Southeast Asia. Matter of fact, he was escalating it, and the country had gotten sick of it. The irony, of course, was that the war went on for another, what, 6 years? But Gene McCarthy, Senator McCarthy from, where was he from? Oh, God, don't do this to me. Anyway, Senator McCarthy ran in the, was it the New Hampshire primary? And came in, came in second? Maybe he won. And that opened the door for Bobby Kennedy to enter. And it was shortly thereafter that, I think I've got my timeline right here, that LBJ gave his, I will not seek nor will I accept the nomination of my party for another term. And then, of course, you know what happened. When Bobby Kennedy got in, he was murdered. But to see a challenge to Barack Obama from the Democratic left. From the Democratic, from the liberal faction of the Democratic Party would be a wondrous thing to behold, wouldn't it? Before the hour, about a week ago, has it been that long? I guess it has. I got an email from Bob Alexander. You remember Bob? Moment with Bob. Bob, who has moved to Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, with his family. And he sent this to me. And I just want to share it with you. I think this is for broadcast. He just said, I sent this to you a couple of days ago. Did you get it? Here's what it says. From Wikipedia, Lethe, L-E-T-H-E, Lethe, the River of Forgetfulness, was one of the five rivers of the Greek underworld. The shades of the dead were required to drink the waters of the Lethe in order to forget their earthly life. In the Aeneid, Virgil writes that it is only when the dead have had their memories erased by the Lethe that they may be reincarnated. And now we know where they get the water to make Obama Kool-Aid. Bob writes, if George W. Bush was still driving the bus and suggested cutting our social safety nets as a condition for raising the debt ceiling, Lawrence O'Donnell and the other, quote, liberal, unquote, pundits would be screeching and howling so savagely that coyotes, feral dogs, and werewolves would flee in terror. Every time that dim bulb sock puppet, Bush, tried to let Wall Street get their bloody meat hooks into Social Security via the Republican three-card Monty privatization plan, he was soundly smacked down by every American, Republican or otherwise, who depended on their monthly Social Security check. And now we have a, quote, Democratic, unquote, president who hasn't suggested offering a percentage of Social Security to money-mad pirates. He's suggesting hacking away at one of the only government programs that not only is completely secure for the next 26 years, it has nothing to do with the deficit debt ceiling whatsoever. And Lawrence O'Donnell strangely believes that this blatant giveaway of our social safety net is somehow akin to Muhammad Ali's rope-a-dope strategy. Well, Bob, it's not just Lawrence O'Donnell. Oh, my God. Bob goes on, if I were to describe the last fight I was in, like Lawrence O'Donnell does, or any other Obama apologist, it would go something like this. I skillfully mashed my eye into his fist. I blocked a vicious uppercut with my chin and thoroughly terrified my opponent by letting him think he just killed me. I sent you this, Mike, in January 2010. The last time we were driving around in Canada, a bicyclist pedaled up next to us and obviously had seen our Obama bumper sticker because he leaned over and said before he veered away, "Obama's a fake. You guys got hustled." The wisdom of the phantom Canadian cyclist, because he was right. The wingnuts are just the noise in the system. Obama is not better nor worse than the previous regime. He is exactly like the previous regime. What has he done to prove otherwise? I wrote that to you a year and a half ago. And that's why we're all packed up and ready to go. Bob. Well, like I said, I got that some time ago. When we were in Seattle, we spent some time with Bob and his wife and son, along with some other great people. And by now, they found a place and have made the move. I wonder how many emails we will get tomorrow, Kathy, about, "Oh, you did it again! Attacking Obama. Are we starting to think that you're a Republican plant, Mike Malloy? Who's paying you, Mike Malloy? Some of those Republican operatives? Is that how you're keeping your damn little program on the air?" Yeah, I know. I know. And if it's not that, it's, you know, I'm being paid by some Jew-hating organization because I criticize the policies of Israel. I know, I know, I know. Rick Perry, he's going to announce his candidacy for president of the United States day after tomorrow in South Carolina. Why, of course he is. That's where Jim DeMint lives. That's where, what's that crazy Bible college over there, Kathy? Bob Jones. Oh, and by the way, thanks to the people who wrote in and said that Gene McCarthy was from Minnesota. How quickly we forget. Christ, it's only been 40 years. No, I'm sorry. I couldn't get my head around it. A state that produced Gene McCarthy can now produce Michelle Bachmann. Think about that for a second. No, don't. Rick Perry. He's going to announce. And he tells Time Magazine in an interview published online today that there's no aspect of running for president that intimidates him. And he feels that mounting a campaign for the White House is what he's supposed to be doing. God has been whispering in Rick Perry's ear, and whispering in Michelle Obama's ear, and whispering in Rick Santorum's ear, and whispering in what's his name, the white-haired guy, you know who I'm talking about, and whispering in, you know, the woman from Alaska. They're all getting whispers. Sarah, this is the Lord. Run for president. Rick, this is the Lord. Run for president. Newt, this is the Lord. I don't know how to. Perry said, "I mean, this is starting to get to that comfort level, and I've got the calmness in my heart. I think that there was a bit of a hurdle initially, but I'm very calm in my heart. And this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Because, you know, I go to bed at night, and all of a sudden I get woke up, somebody's in the room, and I look up, and holy damn, there's Jesus just standing right there in my room." Rick Perry's buddies include Mike Bickle, who says that Oprah Winfrey is a sign of the apocalypse. and this crazy Cindy Jacobs, who says that blackbirds are dying in Arkansas because of gay soldiers. And then you got John Benefield, who calls the Statue of Liberty a demonic idol, and that homosexuality is a plot contrived by the Illuminati to limit the world population. These are people that Rick Perry hangs out with and does prayer services with, huh? Amen? And John Hagee, who said about people who don't have a job or food, and they show up at the doors of his mega 80-million-member church and want something to eat, he says, starve! Starve! Go get a goddamn job! And says that Hurricane Katrina was divine retribution for that city's sin. These are Rick Perry's buds. Dwight McKissick said there is no comparison between the gay rights movement and the civil rights movement. Amen? Because the gay rights movement is a satanic anointment inspired by the Antichrist. I didn't know the Antichrist was gay. Really? Oh my goodness. Well, what about all those disciples of Jesus? How many of them do you think were gay? Three? Six? Think about it now. Go back. Take a look. Take a look at them. And influential Pastor David Barton, amen, who says that Jesus opposed the minimum wage and Jesus opposed the capital gains tax. Hallelujah. And Barton also said that public school students are getting, oh no, homosexual indoctrination. Oh my goodness sakes alive. It just goes on and on and on. Willie Wooten published a book that said African Americans are cursed by homosexuals. These people have such an interest in having male sex with each other. It's just astonishing. It's just astonishing. But this is your Rick Perry. Amen. Rick Perry's going to announce for president. Yeah. Hell yeah. You wish it's all their money, Lord. We're not trying to tax as well. Your brother's keeper just don't apply, because it's everybody for himself.
Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk that walk, and you talk that talk, you knocks me out.
10 before the hour.
Off of my feet. Boom, 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 boom.
Jamie bang, bang, in bang, Maryland. Bang. Writes in about the super committee, these 12 people, six are Republican, six are Democrat, and the six that have as their task, a way to find $1.2 trillion cut in spending in the budget by Thanksgiving. And, I mean, this is such a joke on so many levels. For Republicans who claim that the Constitution was written with the finger of God, they should be the ones absolutely refusing to participate in something like this that is extra legislative. Where does this come from? I mean, where in the Constitution, you hypocritical bastards, does it say, well, when the 435 members of the House can no longer function and the 100 members of the Senate can no longer function, let's appoint 12 people to take over. They can do it all in secret. And then if they don't succeed, then all sorts of financial hell will break loose. I mean, this is madness. This is a democratic republic? No. This is what you get when your country is run owned, manipulated, and controlled by predatory capitalism. This is what you get. This is it. Take a deep look. Take a deep breath. Smell the stink. See the horror of what's happened to our political system. Well, in the meantime, you know, the same clutch of liberal radio hosts who are running around with their hair on fire about, oh, yeah, this is going to work. If nothing else, it'll expose these damn Republicans. So Jamie's writing about that. Hey, Mike, add this to the list of offensive comments and perspectives from Obama apologists. Upon announcement of Harry Reid's Senate picks for the Senate Reid's picks for the awful and likely unconstitutional super congressional committee, one well-known progressive talk show host said that Max Baucus, whom Reid appointed, will serve as the, quote, honest broker, end quote, for the Democrats. Max Baucus. Is she kidding? Max Baucus is at best, and like so many others, a Democrat in name only. During the health care debates, Senator Baucus had positions advocating for a single payer system and a robust public option arrested for speaking up. The physicians were in the audience because Baucus refused to allow any of the invited 40 panelists and so-called expert speakers at his meetings to represent either of those positions. No public option, no single payer. Baucus's panel was also the only one out of five congressional panels that did not vote in favor of a public option. Poll after poll at the time showed that 60+% of Americans wanted at least a public option. 80% of the congressional committees supported a public option. Who didn't want a public option? Max Baucus, the Republicans, and Mr. Obama. And not only did they not want the public option, they were adamantly against a single-payer health care system, which is the cheapest and most effective way to deliver medical care to all. Sold down the river? You betcha. Jamie on the eastern shore of Maryland. Yeah, of course. I mean, it doesn't make any difference. Do you not get this yet? It doesn't make any difference what Barack Obama does. You are going to find the whole clutch, and you know who the culprits are. We don't have to talk about it. We don't have to mention their names. You know who these people are. This whole clutch of people on the so-called political left, you know, that are just struggling out there to show ridiculous America how much of a progressive and a liberal Barack Obama really is. No matter what this president does, no matter who these Democrats who are appointed to, in this case, this super committee, no matter how much their actions have dictated that they are not honest brokers. As a matter of fact, they are the opposite of an honest broker. What is that? Oh, I know. A dishonest broker. It was Max Baucus. Do you remember? Do you remember the physicians, the doctors that were hauled out and told, shut your goddamn mouths? We're not in here to work out single payer or public option. We're in here to give 35 million new customers to the insurance industry. Now sit down and shut up. And this guy's an honest broker? Well, sure. So, if you want to believe that Max Baucus is the honest broker on the Democratic side, amen and amen, then listen to that program. I don't know who said it. I have no idea. And thank you, Jamie, for not telling me who said that. But if you want to hear the kind of left-wing drivel that no longer applies, it's all over. Not all over. I mean, my God. It's available in talk radio. It is. And it's a shame. In my opinion, it's a deep, dark, stinking shame. I don't know what Barack Obama and his appointees have to do to at least have people tear the cotton out of their eyeballs and see that Barack Obama is not a progressive, he's not a liberal, and that to continue to support the man is a guarantee that this insanity, this deceit, is also going to continue. Elizabeth Warren for president. We'll be right back. Commentators are starting to pull back the curtain on Barack Obama, that he may be the nicest man in the world. I'm not saying Barack Obama is as sick as, say, Bush Cheney cabal, but Barack Obama is who he is. And for those of you from the so-called liberal left who want to continue to delude yourself, go ahead. But what's the point of writing to me? I mean, I've my decision as to how I interpret Barack Obama's policies is based on observable reality. Where in the hell are you living? But that's okay. It's politics in this country, and politics in this country has zero to do with reality. It's not reality-based. It's fantasy-based. And it has been for a long, long time. So, you know, to you so-called liberals who want to, you know, write me the nasty letters, they're snarky. They're not hate-filled the way, the stuff I get from the right-wingers. But, of course not. I'm not suggesting that. But it's liberals, I guess, people who consider themselves liberal, who just can't stand what their senses tell them. They were lied to. They're lied to and conned by a man who they thought, and I thought, was presenting himself as a progressive or a liberal when he is not. I mean, Jesus, what do you want? I know what you want. You want me to shut up. Well, that's not going to happen. So the only other alternative for you not to hear this is go away. Don't listen to this program. But if you do listen to this program and the subject of Barack Obama comes up, as it comes up on a regular basis now, then you will hear what you don't like to hear. That Barack Obama is leading, if that's what you want to call this, from the right. And I'm not even sure that it's center-right anymore. I think it's just purely from the right. From the corporatist right, if not further to the right. So continue your delusion if that's comfortable. It is not comfortable to pull back and take a look at what the policies of this man really are and how they're affecting us and his lack of leadership, his lack of interest in solving the problems that we've got now. God knows we've got them. I'm not saying he caused the problems. What I'm saying is he is not using his position as the CEO of this country to lead us to solutions to the problems. And the solutions are there. If I can come up with solutions, for God's sake, if Chris Matthews, I mean, the list goes on and on of people who can come up with solutions, can come up with ideas, then why can't the president? I don't have any resources. I just sit here in this 25-cent radio program and put two and two together, and oh, damn, it's four again. Two plus two. Four. Two plus two. Four. Well, no, wait a minute here. Two. Let me change this. Two plus two. Four. Over and over again. Two plus two. Four. Two plus two. Four. You can't get away from it. So, I don't know why I even bother to, comment on the emails I get from liberals. I am a liberal. Well, I'm a classic liberal, but switching heavily, in the process of switching heavily to liberal left. Left, 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 left! Way over to the left. Where most liberals don't like to admit liberals belong. The socialist left. Absolutely. Democratic socialism. Social democracy. Call it either thing you want to, whatever makes you the least squirmy. I'm a democratic socialist? Oh my God, but I was taught that was bad. Of course you were taught that. Never mind. Most of the commentators on cable television, CNN especially, I shouldn't say most, because most of the ones on MSNBC are erudite, intelligent, they do their homework, they know what they're talking about, even though some of the liberals on MSNBC, and I said most, not all, there's a couple on MSNBC who are just blowhard idiots who don't have a clue as to what they're talking about. But for the most part, I find on MSNBC commentators who do their homework, they know what they're talking about. They present their arguments in a coherent A, B, C, D, E, F pattern that's easy for people like me and maybe you, I don't know, to follow. Even though their ultimate conclusions, I would disagree with. The ultimate conclusion for most of these MSNBC people now, the ones who identify themselves as left of center, or they don't identify themselves that, but you can tell by the angle they're coming from, they still seem to feel that capitalism is the solution if it just weren't handled so poorly, or that Barack Obama really is the leader that they thought he was if he would just come out of the closet and declare himself as the, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the group at CNN, I don't know what happened to that cable network. They are just in the toilet. The latest example, another one from Carol Costello, who is on, I don't know, does she have a regular program or does she just fill in? I don't know, but she's on a lot. You know who I mean, Carol Costello. She had an exchange with the host at PBS, Tavis Smiley, and Professor Cornel West. She had a rather testy exchange with the two of them the other day about their criticism of Barack Obama. Now, I'm sure it just upset someone like Carol Costello to see two men of color dissing on very substantial reasons a president of color. That must just, you know, for some white people, that's just incomprehensible. And I think it's a throwback to what these white people learned when they were kids growing up, that the unspoken agreement in the black community, you don't criticize someone who has made a mark or a name for himself, who happens to be African-American. You don't criticize, because if you criticize, if you're black and you criticize another black man or black woman, then you are opening the floodgates for the white folks to rush in and say, "See! See!" So I think Carol Costello comes from that element, whereas Tavis Smiley and Cornel West come from an intellectual point of view that if somebody is president, no matter what their race or ethnicity is, if they're president, they better act like a president. They better do those things that are presidential from Tavis Smiley's and Cornel West's point of view. I mean, we all do that. I do it. You do it. But Carol Costello apparently just could not understand why two black men were criticizing a third black man who happens to be president of the United States. That's my take on it. Now, call me a racist. I can't wait for the emails to come in on that one. You racist! Bite me. I don't care what you write. Anyway, Tavis Smiley and Cornel West have been two of Obama's most high-profile African-American critics. And according to what I have here, they are currently on a nationwide podcast poverty tour. That's what they're calling it, a poverty tour, to highlight what they say is the lack of attention given to poor people in America. That has a long and sorry history, doesn't it? The lack of attention to poor people in America. Oh, my God. Remember the war on poverty in the 60s? Lyndon Johnson, Bobby Kennedy. Remember that? The war on poverty? Jack Kennedy? The war on poverty. Remember those pictures from Appalachia, white folks, and from the Deep South, black folks who were living in remember the pictures? People living in shacks that I don't know where, maybe something that we'd expect to see in Bangladesh. No offense, Bangladeshis, but what's real is real. You know what I'm saying? But there they were in West Virginia and Ohio, Southern Ohio and Western Virginia and right down the spine of Appalachia all the way down into Alabama. There they were. There were the pictures. Remember those? Looked like pictures from the Depression. And they weren't. They were from modern times, you know, 62, 64, 65, 66. The war on poverty. Well, Tavis Smiley and Cornel West are on what they call a poverty tour. And they were on American Morning the other day on CNN to discuss what they're finding. We'll be right back with more of this. Stay with me. I'm Mike Malloy. Tavis Smiley, PBS radio television host Tavis Smiley and Professor Cornel West are out on what is referred to what they're calling the poverty tour. They were on CNN the other morning on American Morning is the name of the program. Carol Costello was anchoring. Carol Costello just, I don't know, I've several times I've listened to her. Her line of questioning is based on the kind of ignorance that you find with a lot of people who are given the position of anchor on a program. And by that I mean they don't have an overall knowledge of the subject that they're talking about at all, simply because they haven't read stuff in their own company's video library. They haven't gone into the research that's available. And by research, I'm not talking about heavy-duty stuff. I'm just talking about being aware of what you're talking about. Hell, just, you know, one of my biggest on-the-spot research, what am I trying to say, research resources is Google, Wikipedia, for God's sake. But these anchors, and Carol Costello exemplifies this or personifies it, they read what's on the teleprompter and what's on their script. Now, somebody else might have done a little research, and they put it up on the teleprompter, but the anchor person has not a clue about the overall background of the subject they're talking about or that they're interviewing somebody about. And it's really, it's embarrassing. I don't know why it embarrasses me. Maybe because I used to work in that part of the news business, not as an anchor, but as a writer and a producer, and knowing that the stuff that goes up on the teleprompter sometimes is all the anchor cares about. That person, really, what they're caring about, for the most part, when they're on camera, is how they're appearing on camera. They don't give a damn about what the substance of what they're talking about. How do I look? Do I look okay? Oh, good. Oh, hey, how do I sound? And I've never met a group of people who are less secure I can't tell you how many times when I worked at CNN, one of the anchors would drop by my desk afterwards and say, hey, listen, thanks for that piece on, and they would describe it. And as, before I could even say you're welcome, they would say, by the way, how'd I look? How'd I look delivering it? Did I look pretty good? What do you think? What do you think of this jacket? Anyway. Who was it? It was either Tavis Smiley or Cornel West who said to her, to Carol Costello, I think this debt ceiling deal, Carol, was really a declaration of war on the poor. The Congress, the President, respectfully have declared war on the poor. No unemployment extensions for poor people. No closing of a single corporate loophole. Not one new tax. Not 1 cent of new tax on the rich and the lucky. End quote. Now, Carol Costello, you could tell just watching her. She, you watch the body language. She wasn't having any of that. Oh, no. So in response to this, she cited a Heritage Foundation study, which she said claimed that poor Americans live relatively comfortably. Right. This is what a CNN anchor came back with. Here, sitting in front of her, are two people who have made this their life study, part of their life study. The conditions of and relative to the rest of America, the conditions of unemployed, unemployable, the poor folks in this country. And here is this hotshot CNN part-time anchor, Carol Costello. Well, she's, oh, no, you're not going to run that one by me. No, no. She said, citing the study from the Heritage Foundation. I don't know why that surprises me. You know, okay, CNN is right-wing. I understand that. But there sits the anchor person, Carol Costello, citing the Heritage Foundation. There are so many studies out there. She could have. Why did she pick one from a filthy, phony, right-wing think tank, quote, put together by more right-wing billionaire money to undermine and destroy the country? Huh, Carol? Here's what she said to Cornel West and Tavis Smiley. What are they complaining about? Rich people pay the taxes in America, and the poor don't pay any. That's what she said. Now, the ignorance in that statement is beyond belief. Poor people don't pay any taxes. Carol, when you say that, let's say a poor person has a car, since you say they live in relatively decent conditions. When they buy gas, are they paying taxes? When they buy groceries, are they paying taxes? when they pay their rent, does part of that go to taxes to the person who owns the property, who then turns around, takes the rent check, and uses them for taxes? I could go on and on. When they buy new shoes at some cheesy-ass shoe store, they pay taxes. When they go to the Goodwill store and buy third-hand clothing for their children, are they paying taxes? But according to Costello, poor people don't pay any taxes. Well, what do you suppose Professor Cornel West said about that? I'll tell you when we come back. Before the hour, this hour, the entire program tonight underwritten by Farm Aid 2011. Go to their website, farmaid.org. The concert is day after tomorrow in Kansas City, Kansas. You'll find all sorts of information there, so check them out. Also by BioWillie, a biodiesel company that helps lessen the impact of greenhouse gases on the environment. and the Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance. Carol Costello talking on CNN's American Morning with PBS host Tavis Smiley and Professor Cornel West about their criticism of Obama. And anyway, they are talking about how the President of the United States has declared war upon poor people. Nothing new there, except you don't expect that, or most people don't expect that, from someone who appears to be or makes noises with his mouth like a liberal or a progressive. That's what Obama does. He makes these sounds come out of his mouth, these syllables, these strung together words that make you think. If you are a reasonably intelligent person, you listen to Obama, a progressive. This is not some conservative hack, which is what all of the Republican Party is now. So you buy into the story, and then you find out that you did just that. You bought into a story. So Carol Costello, in criticizing what Tavis Smiley and Cornel West are criticizing, wants to know what's the problem with poor people. So she cites this Heritage Foundation study. And she wants to know what poor people are complaining about. I mean, to hear that question come out of the mouth of someone who is not, works for the Murdoch Terror Broadcast Organization. I'm talking about people who appear to be normal. And Carol Costello appears most of the time to be normal. But to hear that question, what are the poor complaining about? I mean, in any context, when you hear that question, well, what are the poor complaining about? Oh, God damn. I mean, come on. That's all, you know, they get food stamps. What are they complaining about? As soon as you hear that question, just like there are other, and we talked about this, there are other key questions or statements that you hear come out of people's mouths, you know, immediately all you need to know about them.
Well, why won't Barack Obama show us his birth certificate?
Right? That's one right there. There's a whole bunch of these now, and this is one of them. What are poor people complaining about, Carol Costello says? They don't pay any taxes! Rich people pay the taxes in America. Well, Cornel West called this a lie. And yeah, it is a lie. I mean, the nature of that statement is the same as a lie, but it comes from a very ignorant person, Carol Costello. Anyone who can make that kind of a statement, declarative or question, whatever, is displaying her or his total ignorance. And they're supposed to be a CNN anchor. Cornel West called this a lie. He said that most of the taxes are paid by middle class. One out of four corporations don't pay a penny in taxes. Now, Carol Costello should know all this. This is what I'm talking about doing just a minimal amount of research. A minimal amount. I bet if you went to her and said, Carol, yo, how much in income, corporate income tax did ExxonMobil pay last year? She'd probably say, well, I don't know. I'm sure it was billions. After Tavis Smiley ran through some of the things he would like Obama to do to tackle poverty, including discussing the issue more and having a national conference on poverty. Now, see, I tend to disagree with that national conference on poverty. What the hell is up with that? We've had those. We've had those. What's a national conference on poverty? That's where you get a lot of academics together and a few social scientists, academics, activists, and all of whom are probably not below the poverty line, anywhere near it. And they sit around and intellectualize about poverty. And then they go, well, you know what we ought to. Meanwhile, people in this country are going hungry. Children are going without medical exams. Old poor people are going without this and that. Middle class, former middle class people who are now find themselves in the ranks that are going without this, going without that. And these intellectuals are sitting around talking about the theories of poverty. I have a better idea. Don't talk about it. Fix it. Make it go away. How do you do that? Well, you don't do it in capitalism. Capitalism demands poverty as part of its structure. It must have an underclass, a permanent underclass. That's the nature of capitalism. That's one of its normal aspects. You would think, wouldn't you, that condemning millions of people to underclass status by an economic system would be enough to pull that economic system down and burn it on the nearest trash dump. You'd think that, wouldn't you? But that's what capitalism is. So instead of another conference...
Well, let's have a conference on poverty. let's see. We have this woman here. She has 74 children, and let's use her as an example. Ma'am, are you poor?
You know, that kind of crap. You don't need to do that. You don't need to do that at all. I'll tell you one quick solution. Take one tenth. Yeah, just one tenth of the murder budget in this country, the war budget, the destruction budget that we apply to the rest of the world. Just take one-tenth of it. It's $1 trillion. Take one-tenth. When you take all the hidden stuff, take one-tenth. So that gives you $100 billion. There you are. Now, go stop poverty. Very simple. Oh my God, it's so simple. But I digress. Costello, after listening to Tavis Smiley run through some of the things he would like to see Obama do, Costello asked another, this is Crooks and Liars, right? I think this is from Crooks and Liars. She asked another skeptical question. She said, quote, "The president represents everybody in America. He's dealing with a lot of stuff right now, so why concentrate on one segment of the population?" Jesus Christ Almighty. Why concentrate on one side of the population? Carol, that's what your president has been doing, only he's been concentrating on the upper segment of the population. He maybe didn't notice. Cornel West shot back, quote, "When the banks had a national emergency, they bailed out and found $700 billion. When we go to war, we find $1.3 trillion. I mean, it just goes on and on. Just one more example of why this country, regarding the political, economic, religious fascism that has taken hold here, why the population of this country is so goddamn ignorant, hopelessly ignorant. Because even on television networks that one assumes is not the same kind of domestic terror organization like the Murdoch organization, one assumes, when Ted Turner set up CNN, that's exactly what it was. It was a news organization. Nobody would have asked a question like that back in the day. Nobody. What Carol Costello asked. Well, what are the poor complaining about? You know, what's the problem with the poor? Nobody would have asked that question. But that was back when Turner owned it, which he doesn't anymore. God. But it was a classic example to me, maybe to you, I don't know, a classic example to me as to why we have such an illiterate population where it concerns our own demise.
Oh, it's the Republican. No, it's the Democrats. No, it's that. No.
No, it isn't. They are just instruments. You know, if you have someone who's insane, and they have a box of hand grenades, and they're throwing hand grenades all over the place and killing people. Is it the hand grenades' fault or the insane person throwing them? The system, the political slash economic slash religious system under which we are supposed to live right now in the United States is utterly, absolutely, and totally destructive. You need proof? Look out the window. Jesus God. Look in your own, look at your own life. Unless you're in that top one-tenth of 1%. If you're in that group, hey, you're doing just great. Man, what's this little punk ass Malloy talking about? Ah, I'm doing great, man. I got trillions in the bank. Screw you people. You should have pulled yourself up with your bootstraps like my daddy did for me. So how do we get out of this? Well, I've offered solutions. You know solutions. Other people are offering solutions. The solutions are there. But if there is no leadership, if there's no leadership to take a look at all these solutions, there are hundreds of ideas out there that would pull us out of this mess. But so many of them are counter to the casino predatory capitalism that now runs everything. So many of these wonderful ideas. We talked with Annie Nelson last night for an hour about one solution. How much support is a biodiesel alliance getting from corporate America? I rest my case. We'll be back in a minute. Farm Aid 2011 and Sustainable Biodiesel Alliance for their underwriting the program tonight and all this week. The Farm Aid concert is Saturday coming in Kansas City, Kansas. You can listen to it on Sirius XM Radio. You can watch it at farmaid.org, farmaid.org. Either way. So regarding Carol Costello's gross ignorance that rich people pay most of the taxes. That's not the issue at all, Carol. Most of the taxes anywhere are paid by the, what remains of the middle class. I guess what Carol's thinking about is when a wealthy person buys another yacht or something and they're stuck with the, I don't know, what kind of taxes are on a yacht now? Excise? Luxury? Sales? I don't know. I have no idea. But anyway, there's always these stories about the 47% of Americans who pay no federal income tax. See, that, you know, if you say federal income, Carol, you might be closer to the truth, but you don't say that. But in that 47% of Americans, most people don't realize that that group includes 1,400 millionaires. Hello, as reported by the Associated Press. Let me say it again. In that 47% of Americans who pay no federal income tax is a group that includes 1,400 millionaires. What? And what about the Forbes 2010 report on what the top 25 U.S. corporations pay in taxes? Huh? Oh, my God. Most people who don't pay federal income taxes have low incomes and see their tax liability wiped out by the standard deduction and child tax credit. But nearly everyone pays other taxes, like I said, sales tax, property tax, state tax, you name it. But you have morons like Carol Costello and her ilk, who will sit there on camera on a major television network and spout the nonsense that comes from the Heritage Foundation and even screw that up. Poor people pay no taxes. What's wrong with you, Tavis Smiley and Cornell West? Didn't you know that? You're black. You should know. All these black people don't pay any taxes. It's that kind of thing. The monumental ignorance of my fellow Caucasians is sometimes just almost more than this white man can bear. That's a real white man's burden. This is the ignorance of other white people. Oh, well. Now I get the emails. Didn't we get one yesterday, Kathy, that said I'm a racist because I'm criticizing Obama? I think we did. Yeah, I'm a racist. And I hate Jews because I criticize Israel, and I don't like anybody. Do you remember that song? They're rioting in Africa, they're starving in Spain. There's hurricanes in Florida, and Texas needs rain. The whole world is festering with unhappy souls. The French hate the Germans. The Germans hate the Poles. Italians hate Yugoslavs. South Africans hate the Dutch. And I don't like anybody very much. But we can be thankful and tranquil and proud because man's been endowed with a mushroom-shaped cloud. And we can be certain that some lovely day, someone will set the spark off, and we will all be blown away. Remember that? Who did that? The Kingston Trio? That was so long ago. And it's still true. Regarding the downgrading by Standard & Poor's earlier this week, or was that last week? Time just rips by when you're having fun, right? Was it this week? Scott Klinger is Director of Tax Policy for Business for Shared Prosperity, a network of forward-thinking business owners and executives and investors committed to building enduring economic progress. Anyway, Scott, I don't know what all that means either, but Scott Klinger said yesterday, or Monday, Wall Street and its Washington representatives, you like that? Wall Street and its Washington representatives downgraded America with disinvestment in Main Street, with reckless speculation, bubbles and busts and misdirected bailouts. Large corporations are reporting record profits, sitting on record amounts of cash and paying less for their profits and taxes than they have since World War II. You're not familiar with this stuff, Carol Costello? Oh, poor baby. He goes on, restoring economic health will not come from more tax cuts or wage cuts or layoffs or cuts in public service and infrastructure. We need to end tax giveaways for wealthy individuals and corporations and get funds flowing to small business job creation, productive innovation, and rebuilding our failing infrastructure, end quote, Scott Klinger. Now, Carol Costello, that comes from the Institute for Public Accuracy. It's an email that goes out almost every day. I'm sure you get them at CNN because I used to use them at CNN. Oh, no, I guess I didn't use these. What am I talking about? Institute for Public Accuracy didn't exist then. I used to use the Encyclopedia Britannica, Carol. But you see, there's another idea. The ideas are there. The solutions are there. It's just that we have no leadership. Not in the executive branch, and damn sure not in the legislative branch. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.